You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
From Shakespeare to Schwartz, from Fosse to Alvin Ailey, from Sondheim to Bareilles, from McNally to Fay, it happened to the greats, it still happens every day.
When lightning strikes,
it's the moment you know.
When lightning strikes,
where you're meant to go. You can stand and shout Eureka, do whatever you like. You'll never forget the moment when lightning strikes.
Hi, this is Gerald Brunner, and you're listening to When Lightning Strikes, where we talk about the tingly mic drop moments that led you to becoming an artist. Ariane Moyad was nominated for a Tony Award for his dazzling performance playing Torvald in A Doll's House opposite Jessica Chastain. An Emmy and Tony nominated actor, writer, and director, in 2002, he co-founded Waterwell, a risk-taking and civic-minded nonprofit theater company. Some of his other theater credits include The Humans, Guards at the Taj, and Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo. Just a few of Ariane's TV and film credits include Stewie in the HBO hit Succession, Love Life, Spider-Man No Way Home, Inventing Anna, Ms. Marvel, and most recently, A24's You Hurt My Feelings. So welcome. It's such a joy to have you and an honor to have you on the show.
Thanks, Gerald.
Thank you. So what a surreal month, I imagine, it's been for you. You're coming off,
yeah.
Coming off, you know, this gorgeous production of A Doll's House and also ending Succession, you know, in the same month.
So crazy.
How does it feel to say goodbye to these, not to be so dark, but to say goodbye to these beautiful characters who you created?
I mean, you know, it is a surreal time. It was three things. It was You Hurt My Feelings, this film, this new Nicole Holofcener movie that just came out, Doll's House, and Succession. I mean, When It Rains, It Pours. I mean, to be real with you, it was... Doing the play was so invigorating and so exciting, and like, and working all, you know, all my scenes were essentially with the great Jessica Chastain playing Nora Helmer. But I will also say 8 shows a week is inhumane.
Yes.
And my body was just, by the end of it, just no longer able to do it. And it was just the, you know, just the proximity of just being in that chair and just all that built up emotion, just constantly like enraged. And, you know, it's good to let some of that stuff go. With Succession, you know, it's funny because I let go of Succession prior to that. You know, my last day of shooting was February 10th, but it's sad to see that show go. It's sad to see it kind of like end its, after, you know, 4 glorious years. I will say, it was we ended with such a high note that it just feels so exciting to, you know, be in something that just like lands in such an amazing way. But it's sad to see it go. Yeah.
You know, I want to start with A Doll's House because I've seen many iterations of that play. I love the play, but I've never seen a production like this production with Amy Herzog's adaptation, this pared down production, Jamie Lloyd directing it. I mean, here you are, you're all on stage, bare bones, you know, it's stripped down and yet it's so full and rich. Can you explain that? You know, what went through your mind when you heard about this production?
You know, I mean, it is a phenomenon, isn't it? You know, there's nothing but just the acting and the words and very minimal staging.
Yes.
Exciting staging, but
so
minimal.
So thrilling.
But I think a lot of it is, you know, just the immense trust that Jamie had for the actors, an immense trust that that Jamie had for the words, and just letting us be there and letting it be what it needs to be. You know, the other big portion of this process is that we had these microphones that were attached, visibly attached to us, like lavaliers. It's visible so that the audience purposefully knows that we are being microphoned, you know, that we're being mic'd, so that we can even get quieter, and because we're showing you on the illusion, we're not hiding what we're trying to do. And those moments where it gets so quiet and so small and so tight and so uncomfortable with the microphones and the ability to have these amazing words, you know, it was easier for us to drop into something very honest and real that feels like you're watching a private conversation publicly.
It was so intimate. Mm. And I love there was a moment where Jessica Nora says, here's a cup of tea, and she doesn't even improvise, right? Is that the line?
Yeah.
She doesn't even, and you think, I don't even need to see her improvising a cup of tea. I get it. I'm with you.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was such a riveting production.
Yeah. One of the moments that I think you're thinking of is when she's like, here's your ring.
Oh, here's your ring. Okay. Sorry.
And she does. Yeah. No, not at all. She goes, here's your ring. And then she waits a sec. She doesn't move.
Yes.
And I'm looking at her and she's looking at me and then she goes, now give me mine.
Yes.
And then, you know, then that's all you need. Yeah. And then in that, and in those scenarios, there's another great moment between Michael Patrick Thornton and Jessica Chastain. Michael Patrick Thornton plays the great, plays Dr. Rank, and he obviously just an unbelievable performance.
Yes.
But there's like, let me light this cigar for you. Thank you. You know, it's such a beautiful moment that by doing the action of lighting the cigar, it actually takes away from the intimacy of what the two of them are experiencing with each other.
I mean, there's so much to talk about. I just want to go back to you, to your childhood for a second, or the moment when you knew you had to be an artist, because you have, from what I've read, just a really fascinating and I imagine complicated, if I may say, trajectory, you know, that you came here to when you were five, if I have this right?
Yeah, that's right. I was a kid that moved here, leaving, kind of escaping Iran in like a war-torn moment in which our whole family was kind of just shattered in a weird way. And I'm the youngest of four kids by 17 years. So I was a big surprise, and it was a, you know, crazy time in the world, and Iran and the United States was not a good thing to, you know, wasn't a popular country, to say the least. So yeah, all those things brought, and then my parents didn't speak a lot of English. We were not of a class to really move over. And so we had that very, I imagine what most people that don't know what would imagine to be a very typical, rough and tough immigrant kind of upbringing, full of joy and love. And the joy and love of it all was kind of maybe why I wanted to, you know, I'm only speculating these things as a 43-year-old man looking back at what was happening at that time. But maybe what was happening at that time was that I was making my family laugh doing bits of things that I would watch on TV. My family was kind of like addicted to like Three's Company and the like slapsticky type stuff. And I could maybe mimic some of that. We watched Charlie Chaplin films as a kid. And so maybe subconsciously I was doing all that just to like make everyone laugh. And maybe that's where it all started from. And maybe it's a little bit of God, you know, all those pieces together can come together and form someone. And really, I think that those being an immigrant growing up in this country, especially as Iranians, especially, you know, trying to make ends meet, and, you know, so much, you know, micro terrible trauma, dramatic things that were happening at the time. But what was also happening at the time was I was realizing that it's never going to get as bad as this. And so much of, you know, I get asked by so many people because I have so many hats that I wear as a teacher, as a producer, as a writer, as a director, as an actor. And so, none of that seems as hard as, none of the stuff that I'm doing today feels as hard as being an immigrant in this country. That to me feels still harder. Like I would not want to go back to those times.
I think about,
and again, they had so much joy in that time. Yeah. I'm only giving. Yeah. There was love and humanity and you know laughs, but crazy.
I can't even imagine. I will not be able to speak the language fully and feeling like an outsider. Do you mind me asking, what did your parents do when they got here?
My dad was. When they got here, my father tried to start a business that didn't do very well and kind of like epically, you know, sadly failed and really couldn't get it off the ground after that, really. You have to realize my parents were much older. So when they're trying things in their 50s, when they got here, they were like they're in their 50s, you know. So it was tricky. All of that was really, really tricky. My mom really, really was the breadwinner of our family, and she basically had a lot of jobs. She worked in childcare a lot, so there would be like babysitting and nannying, and she worked at a childcare center for a long time. And then when we'd come home, she'd also work as like a seamstress, like on the side, like because that was something that she could do. So it was just, you know, I was watching my family, you know, my mom, my dad, trying to like make all that stuff happen, you know. With and learning the new skill sets.
So do you remember one of the first times you performed or were on stage or tell me about that? Because I'm curious how you got.
I was in ESL classes till fourth grade. And in the third grade, it was cool. The ESL teacher, I guess, wanted to do a performance of all the different cultures that are at our school. This is a north suburb of Chicago. And the middle school is called Winkleman, which is in Northbrook, Illinois. And I grew up in Northbrook, Glenview borderline. And in this neighborhood, and the school at Winkleman, they had this moment where all the ESL kids had to come on stage and like say hello in their own language as part of the the assembly, and you had to dress up like you were Iranian. And so I remember the night before, my mom and I were going through the closet trying to find like what we would wear, but we didn't really have anything that was super Iranian. So I kind of slightly looked Russian. But that's what we had. And we came in and I performed it. And I remember Miss Rohr's third grade class with like Lauren Anderson and Justin Tanner and Jennifer Jameson and all, and Anand Shah and Clay Hamana. And all of a sudden I kind of saw them kind of like wave. I was like, this feeling is amazing. Because, you know, I was such a, you know, being in ESL was kind of weird, you know, like I was, you know, it was just like a, it was cool though. That was a real, and then in fifth grade, Gerald, yes. Obviously I played Santa Claus's personal trainer.
Of course.
Where I did, I'm sure, a fair deal of yelling.
You mean like sit-ups and yeah.
Yeah.
Sit-ups and yeah.
Yeah, he had to do sit-ups and stuff. Though it doesn't really make any sense because Santa Claus doesn't really exercise, it seems, but maybe I guess
in this
we had
world,
to.
Yes. So how did you went to IU, right? So how did you go from, you know, being Santa Claus's trainer to deciding, okay, I'm going to put my stake in this profession as an artist? You know, when did that moment happen that you decided, oh, this is life for me?
Yeah, I mean, again, when you have arts programming at a school, at a public school, you can show people a whole new thing. And so at Glenbrook South, at my high school and my middle school was called Field Middle School. And then I went to Glenbrook South High School. There was emphasis on the arts and there was opportunities and I kept on doing them and they liked me and I was a theater kid and I liked hanging out backstage and I like, you know, making costumes and I liked all the stuff that you do when you're a theater nerd. And then I applied to every college for acting and I didn't even get a callback anywhere, to be honest with you. I kind of got a mini callback at Juilliard, but not really. And then I got accepted to Indiana University. And I remember my mom, the last school we were waiting on was University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana. And I didn't get into that one either. And I knew I wasn't going to get into it because I didn't get a callback. And so my mom held the letter and I came home from school and my mom held the letter and she's like, this is from the school. And I'd already told her, cause she didn't really like, I was the one that was managing much of that like paperwork. But my mom, I told her that if it's a big envelope, that means you got in.
Yes.
If it's a small envelope, that means you did not get in. And so my mom was holding the last school and she goes in Farsi, she was like, does this mean that they don't want you? And I said, yeah, it means that they don't want me. And she goes, no, do they not want you for acting? I said, Mom, they specifically don't want me for acting. And so that was tricky to handle. And my mom was mortified. And she's like, what the hell? But to be real with you, Gerald, also what was happening at this time, and this is a little bit of my brother's help. And my brother, who's, again, 17 years older than me, he was becoming a doctor at this moment. And so my mom had like a little thing to like latch onto. And I kind of like wiggled my way out of there. I went to Indiana University. That was the only school I got accepted to. And I went in to meet the undergraduate advisor there. True story. His name is Charles Railsback. I hope he listens to this. I asked Charles, how many shows can I do here? And he goes, as many as you want. And even though there was no other school to pick from, I was like, that seems like the school for me.
So what did you do? What was in your repertoire when you got there?
I did 15 shows in 4 years.
Were there some of them that you did?
The first show, I did Servant. I played the Servant and Servant of Two Masters. I played Iago. I played a little Orlando.
Ooh.
I was lucky in what's the name of that show? Waiting for Godot, obviously. I played a bunch of cool parts, you know, bunch of cool, you know, Shakespeare and I didn't care. I went from after I did Servant of Two Masters, my first freshman year, which is the lead of the main stage show. I went and became like a supernumerary, like an extra in a off campus production of Keely and Do. You know what I mean? Like, I just didn't care. I just really just wanted to be in shows. I just wanted to keep doing it. I think I had a very good sense that if I do it a lot, I think it will make more and more sense to me, maybe, you know? I was really into that kind of like mode.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at chumbacasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And is this right that very soon after graduating, you ended up in New York? And what I think is so incredible is that you co-founded Waterwell, right, in 2002. Yeah. So I love how you took agency over your career. Can you tell people what Waterwell is and the beautiful work you do?
Thank you so much, Gerald. Waterwell is a nonprofit here in New York City. It is a community organizing art and education company. And all three of those engines are really working alongside each other. We believe that we're tackling these really complex questions without being a polemic or without being red or blue or black or white. We're really giving you the truths, and we work alongside the communities in which these truths really matter. Yeah. I'll give you an example in a couple of weeks, or actually next week now. We're working with a bunch of people that are trying to do this act called the Dignity Over Detention Act, where Waterwell is making a piece of art to deal with the one of the bills that we're trying to pass in the immigration world called the Dignity Over Detention Act. So that is one example. The community came to us for that. And then on the other aspect of it, we are a vendor of the New York City Department of Education in Midtown Manhattan. And for 12 years, we've been teaching grades 6 through 12 in a public school setting inside the curriculum, completely tuition free. Something we call the artist as citizen, in which we teach you how to become a world-class artist, but we also teach you it won't matter unless you better the communities that you care about. Where it could be the community, it could be your mosque, it could be your synagogue, it could be your gaming community, it could be your book club. It doesn't really matter. And we've been teaching that for 12 years, and on all three of these engines have been going out now for 20 years. And now I am the board chair, and the organization is run by the great Lee Sunday Evans, our artistic director.
So brilliant. What gave you the inspiration to co-found this? Here you are, new to New York, right? Mm. An artist trying to make it happen. You say, I'm going to co-found this theater company, doing all these cool things.
Rachel, yeah. You know, a lot of I mean, that's a great question. I mean, when I was in Indiana University, 9/11 happened. Yeah. And Tom Ridgely and I, who are roommates and best friends, we were so adamant that the theater could be a tool for change at 21 years of age. And when 9/11 happened, I that was our patriotic push to be like, we got to do this. We have to do this. And we believe and still do. In our mission statement, when we were 22 years old in 2002, a year after 9/11, was about accessibility, responsiveness, civic-minded, socially conscious, you know, bringing arts to the world and changing the world through arts. Like, we believed in that. Some of that was just like pure idealism and positivity that we were like pushing out into the world. Some of that was craziness. Some of that was, you know, but to be real, also, we moved to New York City and we knew nobody. Like, there is not a huge Indiana University alumni network back then. There was nobody. And so how do you put on a play? Well, you got to write the play. And then, they were like, you got to buy the play, but you can't get the rights. Well, how do you get the rights? You can't. You have to pay for it. We can't. Well, just write the play. Okay, write the play. Who's going to direct it? Nobody. We'll direct it. Okay, we'll direct it. And we just kept on doing that. And the first 3 years of Waterwell, we put out 5 shows in 3 years, all written, directed, and produced by us. And the fifth one was a show called The Persians, a comedy about war with 5 songs. And that kind of blew up. The New York Times came, and then I got signed by a big agency, and then we just kept on moving that engine forward, and it wasn't very popular, the type of work we were doing, and we weren't really actually even going after too many theater audience goers, but the industry respected us, and they knew what we were doing, and they just, you know, but it was just not a popular form at the time. Anyway, all this to say is that kind of led to more and more things, and along the way, I was teaching at the school. at the Professional Performing Arts School in Midtown Manhattan, and then Waterwell in 2009 put in a bid to run the education program, and here we are now.
That's so extraordinary. I love how you devise work, you know, with the students, with the, you know, and yeah. how it informed your career as well, and how it led to your, like you said, getting an agent and all the these pieces, you know, because you were following your passion, your path, your way, instead of just sitting back waiting for the phone to ring.
Yeah, I feel like a little bit of that is just the privilege of being an immigrant, to be honest with you. That I have that privilege over other people just because there's this immigrant mentality that we hope that we are here doing enough for our parents' struggles.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that feeling, no matter how much I try to fill that hole, it's kind of unfillable, you know? So a little bit of it just is just pure, like, we're going to get this done. And again, like I said, none of it feels as hard as that earlier stuff. And you had amazing people around us. Tom Ritchie is a genius. We had these amazing people that just... It just started with the two of us, and then it became five people, then 10 people. You know, now we're, we have, 15 faculty members. We do, I'm very proud of the work that Waterwell does.
And continues to do. Well, can we talk about Succession? What do you miss about that experience? I know it's been several months since you shot it.
The thing I miss most about Succession, there's two things I miss most about Succession. The people and the scripts. That's what I'm going to miss. Yeah.
And I'm curious, everybody has an opinion who I talked to said who they wanted to take over, and what a fascinating choice, you know, that none of the kids got to take over.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think you would like to take over?
Well, Gerald, there's only one answer. Stewie.
That's what I thought.
There's only one answer. One competent person amongst a bunch of fools.
And why? I mean, why?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the funny thing about Stewie is Stewie at the end of it still is with Tom too.
Yeah.
You know, that's the amazing thing about Stewie. He will go for whoever wins.
Yeah.
I think, of all of those folks, who does Aryan think should win?
Yes.
I don't think any. I think they should all lose. I hope they all lose.
Why? Because they're just.
Because I despise them. I despise those people. And I despise people that have that much wealth and that much power over us.
Yes.
I really do. I'm talking about the 0.0000. I'm talking about the Logan Roys of the world. Like, no one should have that much energy and power. In the last season, there's this episode where it's election night. And you're seeing these two sons and this and the Roy family make decisions about our future right in front of our eyes. And we all, honestly, that to me is like the scariest Succession episode, because we all think that's how it goes. That's probably how that plays. And to be real with you, I hope that they all fail.
Well, they have so much.
Ewan is who I like. Ewan.
Well, they have so much power. It's really Shakespeare. When I think about, it's like Macbeth or Hamlet, that they're just so, that they're so base and complicated and can be, I hate the word, I don't like the word evil, but like there's this.
There's some evil
there's
in there.
There's a lot of evil, you know, when you think about the things that they did or got away with. And it's the scripts, though, are fascinating because you really do care about them. That's the thing. We care about Stewie, as corrupt as he is.
Totally.
And I want to talk about also You Hurt My Feelings, because here, granted, some projects, like long-term projects, have come to an end this month, but you have this beautiful new movie, You Hurt My Feelings. So can you talk about that from A24? And you play an actor?
A24 has this...
Yeah.
Yeah, A24 has this amazing new movie written by and directed by Nicole Holofcener called You Hurt My Feelings, starring the unbelievable Julia Louis-Dreyfus as the lead. And I play Mark, this kind of out-of-work actor who... might be okay, but is not great, but really still believes in it and still wants to do it. And the story is a very simple one. It's what happens if you're a loved one, you find out that they actually don't like your work. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus finds out very early on that her new memoir that she's been writing, that he has been saying that he loved, her husband has said, it's not very good. And she finds out. And how do you deal with that? And that opens up that's just the tip of the iceberg, because it opens up so many other things. There are so many reasons where we, you know, with the parental, with kid, you know. So it's a glorious movie, movie theaters only. Please go check it out. It really feels like an old nostalgic way of watching movies back in the day you went to the movie theater. It's so fun.
And I think about the complexities of relationships, you know, watching it, thinking, when is it okay to really tell the truth to someone you love, you know, without, you know, is that safe sometimes? You know, is it protecting them?
Tricky.
You know, it is tricky because you don't want to hurt people you love, but if you can't tell them the truth, who can? You know, and we're all,
I feel that way. I feel that way all the time. Yeah. You know, should you not, you know, it's okay. You know, if I'm really passionate about it and I, you know, it's do or die, I think my wife will just lie to me. That's fine. You can tell me later. Tell me like a year from now. You know what? I'm going to be honest with you. I hate it. Okay, fine. It's okay. Over.
Can I take these three characters, Torvald, Stewie, and who you play in You Hurt My
Mark.
Forgive me. And Mark, what do you love about them? They're all very rich, very delicious. What do you love about each one?
I love Stewie's confidence. I love... Torvald.
Torvald.
I love... tricky one. Good question, Gerald. Okay. I think that Torvald, though misguided and clueless, really does love Nora. I love that he loves her. I think he loves her in all the mistaken ways, but I do believe that the love that he has for her is genuine. And when she leaves him, he's devastated.
It's heartbreaking because I can't stop thinking of the children.
Oh, so
hard. And it's painful. I remember I get so invested in that character, and I think, is Torvald trying to save his family at the end? And as you're as misguided and clueless as he
clueless,
is.
Narcissist.
Also, and cruel.
Cruel.
And he also, I also think, well, context. I mean, women didn't have the right to vote. They couldn't own property. They weren't looked as real as citizens. You know, women were seen very differently back then. And Nora's done something really... in his mind, in society, could destroy him. And it's...
I mean, it happens back then. I mean, to be honest with you, shit like that happens today. I mean, we think that we in our bubbles in the East Coast. I mean, there are things like this happening day to day, everywhere across the country, the globe, Iran, everywhere. And so, and sometimes we turn a blind eye to it. We don't see it because we have been so brainwashed by the misogyny that's been put upon us that we don't even know what up is up anymore.
You're right.
You know,
you're right.
Going back to Mark, what I love about Mark is that even though he might not be the world's greatest actor, he's got the resilience to keep pushing ahead. I like that about him.
He's a
resilience.
Unstoppable. Yeah. Can I ask why you, I love the choice in A Doll's House. Nora literally, I mean, I can give it away now. I hope that's okay to give it away. That she literally walks out of the theater. Literally.
Yeah.
It is absolutely riveting because I thought, no, is she really literally
literally walks onto 45th Street.
45th Street. That's such a fascinating choice. Can you give some insight into that incredible choice to have her
Jamie Lloyd knew it from the very beginning that the ending of the play, how the ending was going to be. Because when we met in London, he described it to me and I thought it was like, holy goodness, that's going to be fantastic. And so that was, yeah. So he knew it from the very, very jump. And every night it was just, a coup d'etat, as Brian Cox said to us. He's like, so coup d'etat. I was like, okay, thanks. It was just how exciting to see our heroine walk out into this crazy world that is New York with color and sound and just see what that it all feels like and be like, oh my God, what is happening here?
Did you have people back there sort of monitoring?
There was two people on the side with so they had a permit for the block. The block was closed up. They have security guards on both sides. But that being said, there was paparazzi and fans on each side every night. So
it's extraordinary. And I love the layers of you that you play so many eclectic characters. I mean, that you could play Torvald and also Stewie and then of course, the humans and Marvel.
Yeah.
And is there a role you're aching to play or kind of character who you haven't played yet? You're like, I've got to tackle this.
I really want to do a comedy. That's what I really, I want to do a romantic comedy. That's what I really want to do.
All right, I read that with Jessica Chastain, right? That would be amazing to.
Yeah, it would be a fun duo.
That would be a really fun duo. And is there something in a parallel universe, if you could go back to that kid in ESL class who's just discovering acting, you know, finding your way, is there something you wish, knowing what you know now, you could tell that kid?
It's not always as scary as it seems. You know, I think I lived with a lot of fear growing up.
Yeah. Yeah. And how beautiful that you're a teacher, you know, that you can, what does that give you, be a teacher?
You know, I think teaching for almost 17 years at the high school level, which is the level that I love more than any level, is it teaches me, to think outside of myself, that there is so much more to this world than acting. You know what I mean? It's about stories. It's about hearing other people's stories. You know, I'm so honored. I have so many of my students are now, 12 years. Well, I've been teaching for 17, but 12 years of Waterwall students. There's so many students of mine that are playwrights. There's someone that's running a nonprofit in the Bronx. There's someone that's, starting her own, fashion line. And there's so much stuff that they're doing out there, working in the environment, one of our students is, a lead of the new Ironheart. She is Ironheart. To me, that, gives me so much joy, but it also, selfishly gives me so much confidence to do everything else with more ease because it feels outside of myself. Sometimes teaching, I say this to people, selfishly, just do it selfishly. Giving to others is a nice, gives you a little boost that you might need.
Well, it's such a gift to have you on the show. Thank you so much, Arian.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for taking the time and have a great day.
You too.
It still happens every day when lightning strikes. It's the moment you know.
The theme song was written by Tom McGovern. This episode was edited by Kyle Moore. This episode was produced by Anna Stroud. When lightning strikes.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the Rise Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RiseTheatre.org, because only together we rise.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.